The big problem, not enough guns in Utah. This is Jim DeBacchus on the left.
Help free Salt Lake City. It's Representative McKay on the right.
We get to say goodbye to a great former governor, Olin Walker. I'm Natalie Gochner in the Political Center. This is Both Sides of the Aisle. But first, this news. Good morning. I'm Natalie Gochner. This is Both Sides of the Aisle. I'm joined in the studio by Dan McKay on the political right.
Hey, everybody.
Welcome, Representative and Senator Jim DeBacchus on the left.
Good morning, Natalie.
I want to start out by talking about this news in Salt Lake City about it being the least free city in Utah. And I caught wind of this because I'm driving on 400 South or University Boulevard,
and
there's
billboard.
A billboard.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what is that? And it's this Libertas Institute, a libertarian institute that looks at city ordinances and has discovered that Salt Lake City puts the most government in people's lives.
Freestcities.org. FreeEstCities.org. And, you know, it's kind of a funny billboard because we're always talking about what we're the most at or what we're the best at,
yeah.
You know, or the most accessible.
We tend to have a habit of doing that.
Yeah,
here.
We do. And so it's interesting that, you know, somebody would actually make an index and they've actually gone through and done some rankings based on a bunch of things. And, you know, some of them are somewhat petty, dogs on leashes, those kinds of things. But I just thought the quote was interesting, right?
Tell us the
quote. So Salt Lake City was voted as the least free city, yeah, the least individual freedom in Salt Lake City proper than you do anywhere else. And the quote was from Councilman Luke Garrett. It's about community reflecting values like safety, clean air, and clean water. You have to reduce individual freedom for the public good.
Jim?
Well, look here. I know our legislature just loves this, and they hate
You're the civil libertarian.
They
hate
child labor laws and those stupid health department inspectors who go in and find sewage in the stew.
Goats being
all of those bureaucrats that are out there protecting the public, and you guys want to do
away
themselves.
With them all. Protecting the public from themselves. And that's... I think that's amazing. For the party who's all about individual choice and, you know, making sure that the individual is empowered to be out trumpeting for, you know, less freedom, that kind of thing. I just think it's interesting, Jim.
It's rigged. I mean, the Libertas, they are so wacky. They,
well, that's
the whole
what's interesting, too, is
it's
a libertarian group.
Yeah.
And Jim's kind of defending it in a way.
Yeah. He's saying, I'm okay being less free.
I'm okay with the health department regulations.
You see that with health department? This is, you go down the list of regulations and it's, you know. It's
zoning. Mess. Did you see that restaurant that was somewhere in the city that was killing lambs out in the back?
And there was a bucket with blood in it.
And there was a bucket.
The
and
food
Dan
was fantastic.
I'm going to defend it.
It was fantastic and you totally missed out.
All right. Well, let's do this. There, big news in Salt Lake City, of course, is a transition to a new mayor. And Mayor-elect Biskupski, she's got a little bit of news going on. You know, first of all, the city council is not going to give her transition money, but they reversed themselves. But I thought more interesting was the news that she basically sent a template to, you know, the cabinet of Salt Lake City, Mayor Becker, and said, you know, everyone resign, and then I'll review it and decide whether to accept your resignation. And, of course, Mayor Anderson was, you know, very critical of that. Rocky basically saying that was arrogant.
Yeah,
Jim, did you have anything to do with this? Is this a good idea? And I have some commentary on it as well.
Look, maybe there's a more graceful way to do it. I don't know. But look, there's 100 people that the new mayor brings in, and that's the new mayor's team. And it shouldn't have come as a great shock to those 100 people that a new mayor probably will bring in new ideas. She interviewed every single one of those people. But I think it's pretty common to ask for everybody to resign and then take who you will and not hire the rest.
You know, Jim, that was my reaction as well. So I worked for Governor Norm Bangeter when he was reelected. And I remember I was a political appointee. I was a peon, but I still served at his service at will. But I remember we all got a letter and we had to sign it. And that didn't even change administration. That was Republican to Republican in a political office. Of course, the city not being political. But I think the media set this up entirely incorrectly because I think this is just an expectation in political jobs that when the new person comes on, you got to make it as easy as possible for them to bring in the team they want. because they won.
Otherwise, why have an election?
Yeah.
You know, if the same, everybody stays the same.
And I'm guessing that a lot of us don't know some of the private conversations that the mayor-elect had with people to say, listen, I'm going to do this broadly, but, you know, you're on my team.
Okay. I'm with you 100%.
Okay, let's hear it. Yeah.
Both of you on the same thing. The only thing that was a little bit interesting to me is there are 100 people in Salt Lake City who serve at the pleasure of the mayor.
That surprised you, the number?
It surprised me. That's a big number, right?
But so, I would say for a Republican, I mean, like, you know, on the right, I love political appointees.
Oh, yeah.
Because they're not government bureaucrats.
No, that in that factor, and this is where I actually really love the Biskupski move, is there should be more turnover in government. There really should be. The idea of career people making decisions on behalf of the people, you know, you get into these legacies where people have their legacy projects and they protect them throughout their careers. Mm-hmm. I think that's usually a bad idea, and I think Biskupski doing this as a mix-up is a great thing. It just really sounds bad. Mm-hmm. And I think Mayor Anderson jumping on and calling somebody arrogant is really hilarious to me. Only, you know, just Rocky is certainly a nice person individually, but his public persona is not my favorite. But calling people arrogant, based on some of the moves that he's made, certainly that seems a little overstated.
I would make it a lot more than 100, frankly. I mean, there's thousands of employees in the city to think you can really change things. I would go into that planning and zoning, and if I were the new mayor and they would let me, I'd say to everybody on that level, you all are out, and I'm going to go through you. How do you shake up government if you can't fire people?
Yeah, I'm with you guys in a big respect. I mean, I have a great respect.
So what's the other side of this issue?
Well, the other side is this. I have great respect for career service people who keep government running through transition after transition after transition. And I saw the best of the best in Washington, D.C. They're in the senior executive service, is what they call them, SES. Uh-huh. And they are so important to our country. And certainly state government has them as well.
Yeah.
But I do think it's helpful to have, if you're moving the needle, to move towards more at-will employees and fewer career service.
Yeah. And, you know, in that respect, there is some value in the institutional memory, right?
Yeah.
And
I
would bet, I don't know this 100%. I've got no inside knowledge. I'm not Jim. But I think there's a chance that she will say, of the 100 out there that are political appointees, 75% of you are doing a great job, and we're going to keep you on for one thing or another.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know that for sure, but I think there's a pretty fair, you know, Parks and Recs and some of the other places where there's less problem or less concern
less
in the
political
public.
Yeah.
Although Parks and Recs with the golf courses, you know, maybe not.
Hey, Jim, we've got a few more minutes in this segment. How are your debates going with Jonathan Johnson?
So we had our first debate on the Fox News Radio of St. George.
And we should remind our listeners why he's debating you.
Well, because he can't find anybody else to debate him. So Jonathan Johnson is running for governor. He's the chairman of Overstock.com, and he's running against Gary Herbert.
It's not that you are the vestige of Gary Herbert.
And as far as I know, you're not running for governor, right?
I'm not running for governor. So the question was, should I just play Governor Herbert and take all of his positions or be myself?
And you took Herbert.
Yeah, of course. It's so easy for me. I mean, we're hardly distinguishable. No, we had a great debate, and I think it's going to be a fun election, and Gary's going to have to debate him sooner or later. And I'll tell you one thing, if you look at Gary Herbert like he's going to be a pushover and like he's a lightweight and like he doesn't know what's going on, you lose. Mm-hmm. He does his homework.
Yep.
He knows what's going on. He is very, very sharp and politically astute, and a lot of people have underestimated him over the years. Now, he's still dithering. He's not a particularly good leader. He's not, you know, he doesn't have a vision for where the state goes, but he's pretty darn good.
I think we're going to take that endorsement that he just gave of Governor Herbert.
Let's replay that over and over.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Thanksgiving's come and gone, and we haven't seen the Democratic challenger emerge yet to Governor Herbert.
I just wait. I watch Twitter all day waiting for the big announcement on who this is going to be, Jim. I've got it narrowed down to about 3,000 people.
Natalie's going to support him.
I doubt it. You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. I'm Natalie Gochner. I'm joined by Jim DeBacchus and Dan McKay. In our next segment, we're going to talk about the Lake Powell Pipeline.
Jim DeBacchus on the left.
Dan McKay on the right.
Natalie Gochner in the political center. This is Both Sides of the Aisle. I hate to talk about sad or sobering kind of news, but these shootings are just breaking my heart. These crazy situations where we have people going to public places and start firing. And where it's really affecting me differently is I wear an Apple Watch. And so I get these alerts, and you'll just be in the middle of a meeting or doing something, and you'll get an Apple alert. And sometimes it's like a jazz score or something, but a lot of times it's something going down, you know, whether it's in Colorado, California. Jim, this is just, I know where you're going to come down on it, but give us your update on where you think this country is and what should be happening.
Look, it's just stupid.
Gun control. We should be.
We should. we need to get back to registration. And the state wasted, in my opinion. We went into a frenzy, as happened, because some clown with a pickup truck drove up the steps of the Capitol and then went in to the Capitol, and the Capitol was on lockdown. So we spent $2.5 million building these bollards all around every group of steps. They're ugly. They were expensive. They're not going to help a thing.
Nope.
And you know what you can do? You can go get, what do you call those big giant,
it was call
hard
it
for me
Uzi.
To even carry in them, those big giant things with bullets this big. You can take that with a backpack full of as many bullets as you can carry and that giant gun and go sit in the gallery of the House in the Senate. As long as there isn't a chamber, a bullet in the chamber, and that's perfectly fine. But we spend all that money on those stupid things with pretending that there's security. You know what? We ought to grow up. The First Amendment should have some major reforms.
Yeah.
This is just sad the way America's going, and I'm tired of it.
Dan, I remember after Sandy Hook, you know, the terrible
the
shooting
tragedy,
and
tragedy
the children, and I thought that would be a tipping point. I just really thought we hit it. And of course, I know that, you know, President Obama tried to make it that, and it didn't happen.
No. You know, I think it's really, really interesting that, remember in the last tragedy, President Obama said, we cannot allow this to become the usual, right?
Uh-huh,
or
uh-huh.
We can't allow this to become commonplace.
And he even said, it doesn't happen anywhere else in the world.
It,
you know,
might
kind of
be
thing.
Too late.
Yeah.
In other words, it's becoming so commonplace that, you know, even though you're getting the alert on your watch, you notice it's somewhere else and it doesn't.
And then
know,
I go on with my day.
It doesn't necessarily mm-hmm. change your behavior. Doesn't.
We had Trolley Square. But
we had Trolley Square and same thing. So it seems, you know, it seems that no amount of education, no amount of whatever is really changing our behavior.
Mm-hmm.
And so while I understand the cry for gun control, there is a significant population, and myself included, that really does believe that we have a genuine right of protecting ourselves, that we shouldn't necessarily have to rely on the state to protect ourselves. The problem is when you allow us to protect ourselves, you also allow the bad guys to get guns. And I think in Jim's defense, I can understand that logic,
mm-hmm.
right? But I think the worst thing you can do when you look at the bad guys versus good guys is you sweep all of the good guys into the same pool and restrict them the same way that you do the bad guys.
I saw the news report that I guess it was Black Friday had the highest volume of background checks ever that the FBI's processed. So
yeah.
We're clearly not moving away from guns.
I was at Cabela's.
We're moving
it
more towards.
It was a four-hour wait to buy my Black Friday instrumentality.
Yeah, so we are moving more towards guns. Jim,
it's sadly the rhetoric from the left, though, is causing a lot of this onslaught of this rush to buying
things. It's our fault. Yeah,
no.
Exactly.
It's not your
just like
it's the publicity and the fear that you create by it. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, that's right. It's Obama's fault. You know,
well,
the point is that there's a lot of people making a lot of money off of this and scaring people and more people are carrying and all the rest. We got to work this out, and there's only one way to work it out, and it's going to take a lot of generations, and that is to say, you know what? You like going out and shooting guns? Fine, go out and shoot guns. But we need as a country to have much more restricted access to guns. And that, like it or not, that's what's going to happen.
I'd say from the political middle that I'd take more restrictions and then I'd take an awful lot of mental health funding that's not presently there. And I say that as a daughter of a psychiatrist.
Yeah.
Medicaid expansion, yeah.
Okay, I don't know how to transition from guns to Lake Powell, but let's try our best shot. We had 22 economists from the University of Utah who sent a letter to our Senate president, our speaker, basically analyzing the cost of the Lake Powell pipeline. This would take Colorado River water that's in Lake Powell and bring it over to mostly St. George area. Mm-hmm. I think some Cedar City and Kanab and whatnot. Their analysis showed that there's just not enough money for this, and that property taxes and user rates would have to go so high that it wouldn't make sense. Of course, what they're not saying is the way that you'll fund this is by taking money from other areas of the state to make this happen. In other words, the urban areas along the Wasatch Front.
Yeah.
Dan, Jim, who wants to take this one on?
I think it is highlighting one of the biggest issues we have in the state. And I know that water is religion, so I don't want to offend anyone's religion around here. But it is becoming more and more clear that conservation needs to be a prime target for, you know, how we're preparing for the water needs of the state. We are not doing this currently. We currently use property tax to subsidize water rates so that those who are the highest users, i.e., nonprofit organizations, schools, hospitals, etc., with large, you know, open space
churches.
Around them, churches,
yeah.
you know, yeah. they then do not pay a significant portion of their water rate that they would use. Mm-hmm. And that's part of it, right?
Yeah.
But the other part of it is that you've also got users who will use an inordinate amount and have a larger lot or do whatever with, you know, all in sod or do whatever. And they're not paying the full freight of the cost of their water. People chase incentives. And that has to change if we're going to get real conservation.
So you'd raise rates. Raise rates.
With braces, that's hard.
That's hard.
I would end the shift of water to property taxes and move it back to the users actually paying for their water.
Jim, I love that saying, I'd rather be head of the ditch than head of the church. What do you think on water?
Dan is absolutely right on this. In Salt Lake City, we have graduated water rates.
More you use, the more expensive
it is. And I'll tell you, and it goes up a chunk. I bumped into that higher thing, and you start looking at that, it's a lot more expensive when you start using above your allocation. That makes me do what? I don't shower anymore. Or, you know, so by putting it on property taxes, there is no link between me turning that tap on and what I pay. That's craziness. And
And I would just add that what makes it crazy is that it's metered. Most water, I realize that in Davis County you have a secondary system that's not metered, but most water in this state is metered. And so we know how much you use. It's a government service that we know how much you use. There's so much government we don't know.
I just want to say this. This is truly a kooky plan.
Let's hear.
The Colorado River was just named by the nonprofit American Rivers Council as the nation's most endangered river. The pressures are everywhere. And this is to take millions and millions of gallons of water out of the Colorado River. And that's assuming, of course, that there's going to be a Colorado River that can yield that. And piping it uphill 140 miles to St. George so that they can meet the expectation chart, which they've built, which is equal to where they were in the boomiest of boom, boom, boom times. So assuming all of that, it's going to cost around $40,000 in water fees to build a new house.
Yeah.
What is that going to actually do? This is a little bureaucratic water empire that is demanding this be done. It's terrible policy for the state. It's terrible for Washington County. There is no conservation down there. And the first step ought to be we ought to go to Las Vegas-style conservation.
Well, I wouldn't say there's no conservation. I think Washington County and the cities down there are doing a lot to conserve, changing landscaping requirements. It's just if we want to continue to grow as a state and want it to be sustainable, we need to be shifting more towards conservation so that, you know, once conservation is accomplishing all that it can – or to, you know, we see significant efforts in that, I could see the state still participating in Lake Powell Pipeline.
Yeah.
Despite its cost.
I'll make a prediction from the political center. It's another quote, but it's the Mark Twain quote. Whiskey is for drinking and water is for fighting. We're going to keep fighting about this.
Yeah, there is a water bill every year that starts in the House. There's a water bill that starts every year in the Senate. And they cross in the middle, and it's like ships passing in the night that never, ever, ever, ever find a landing spot, and it's really kind of sad.
Interesting. You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. I'm Natalie Gochner. I'm joined by State Senator Jim DeBacchus on the left and by Representative Dan McKay on the right. We got Mayor Becker over in Paris. We got these climate talks going on. I find it interesting that a mayor of a city is going to spend 9 days there. So that's just a thought. But what's he got to lose?
Because
you know?
Why not go to France?
Yeah, why not?
Because France in December.
But separate from that, the more interesting thing, I think, is that we've got a showdown getting ready for Obama's, you know, saying one thing about our country and Congress is going to do another.
Oh, man.
I don't know. Jim, have you been watching this?
Look, head in the sand. This is not an issue for serious people and serious scientists. There is global warming. It is man-made. And if we don't do something about it, our children and our grandchildren are going to face the grimmest of consequences. And we're having this selfish moment the way we did with cigarettes and smoking where we said, it's not really happening. It's not happening. You know, maybe it's causal, but the scientific evidence isn't there. And we go through this. It's part of the cycle. And let's just hope that it's not too late when we finally convince everybody to get on board, because that fossil fuel industry is there and they've bought off everybody. It's real, and we need to respond now while there's time.
Dan, Mayor Becker's point would be that Salt Lake City controls a lot of the water supply for this state, not just for the city, but for a lot of the urban area, and also the ski industry. And he would make the point that there is not anybody who runs a ski resort who's questioning whether this is a good use of time.
I know. I know. This is becoming I don't know if this is going to be one of those fights that lasts eternally. Mm-hmm. It really is an interesting debate. I love Jim, and I find him very persuasive on one or two issues.
He's confessing.
But I will say the problem is, you know, everyone says, this is settled science. It's all figured out. We got it all. If it was settled science, I think this would be a different result. But is there global warming, or is this within traditional global trends? That answer is not settled. Is this man-caused? Is it not man-caused? That is not settled. And as a result, the actions that come out of it, I think it's going to be a bunch of horsewash like the last recommendations that came out of it, because no one bought in. They were all voluntary stuff, and it still will be.
This is another place where I'm very properly placed in the political center, because I think we have ample evidence that the surface of the earth is rising. I think we have ample evidence that man's contributing to it. I just don't think we have the right policy interventions. That's where I don't get quite to Jim. Now's a great time to remind our listeners about the KCBW fundraiser on December 12th. It's a private home. You can call the station at 801-359-5279. Jim, you're going to be there. I'm going to be there.
I'm going to be there. Bruce Wayne's house. It's going to be more fun. Come meet us. Talk to us. Come to this fundraiser or else don't listen.
Dan?
Ditto.
Ditto. Hey, we've got to finish up the program, and I didn't mention to you, too, I was going to do this, but I think we needed to say some words about Aline Walker. I think we should just forego gripes and talk about this good governor for a minute and talk about what her legacy was, what she meant to this state. Her funeral is tomorrow. And, I worked with her for many years. I'm happy to close it down or start. But, Jim, is there something you'd want to say?
Just a sweet, wonderful woman. And had she not been a woman, she would have had her own term.
Garbage.
And, believe me, they okay. demeaned her and haunted her into not running. Had she been a man, she would have run, and she would have been a lot more qualified than Lieutenant Governor Herbert to march in. And I believe that that's why.
I don't know if you read Richard Davis's column in the Deseret News about it, but he basically said that had she won, he talked about all the things that we would have avoided that Huntsman did that he didn't agree with, including the big tax cut in terms of the income tax that's taken so much away
flat
from education.
Tax,
she wouldn't have allowed for it because of her education DNA.
Interesting.
Dan, your comments, either political or just emotional about this great woman.
Yeah, I think, she's pretty spectacular as far as the leadership she's provided the state. I always struggled with policy from her perspective because I was never really 100% bought in. But I do admire her willingness to just grab something and hold on to it tenaciously until it was done.
Courage,
yeah, you know, and, yeah. And I can recall, you know, one of my good friends and also now deceased, Speaker Lockhart has told me many stories of being in leadership and working with Olene Walker as she was the governor and how much she admired working with her, despite the fact that it was a difficult because they were often on the other side of issues.
Yeah, isn't that interesting? You know, I tell people that she was 100 years ahead of her time. Hmm. Now, that's a little bit of a sad comment. But I actually think it's kind of true. This is a person who had, I don't remember how many children. Is it seven or eight children? Mm-hmm. She had a PhD.
Yeah.
She owned a small business. If you remember Country Crisp, the potato chips, I grew up eating them. She obviously was an elected official both in the House and then also lieutenant governor and then for just over a year governor. When are we going to get that again?
When are we going to get that kind of vision and leadership and persistence and not crawl in the hole?
I'm waiting for Natalie to
run. Take care of the wind.
You guys are nice. You've been listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. I've been joined by Dan McKay and Jim DeBacchus. The program is produced by Ross Jamblis. Thank you so much for listening.